finished yesterday," muttered Kwai. "And yet it is perhaps the oldest thing in the city."
Baiyaz nodded towards the ruins behind them.
"All the achievements of Juvins are laid waste. Fallen, broken, forgotten, almost as though they had never been. But the works of the Master Maker are undiminished. They shine the brighter, if anything, for they shine in a darkened world."
He snorted, and mist blew from his nostrils.
"Who knows? Perhaps they will still stand whole and unmarked at the end of time, long after all of us are in our graves."
Luthar peered nervously down towards the thundering water, no doubt wondering if his grave might be there.
"You're sure it will carry us?"
"In the old time it carried thousands of people a day, tens of thousands. Horses and carts and citizens and slaves in an endless procession, flowing both ways day and night. It will carry us."
Pharaoh watched as the hooves of Baiyaz's horse clanged out onto the metal.
"This Maker was plainly a man of quite remarkable talents,"
murmured the navigator, urging his horse after. Kwai snapped his reins.
"He was indeed. All lost to the world."
Nine Fingers went next, then Luthar reluctantly followed. Pharaoh stayed where she was, sitting in the pattering rain, frowning at the bridge, at the cart, at the four horses and their riders. She did not like this. The river, the bridge, the city, none of it. It had been feeling more and more like a trap with every step, and now she felt sure of it. She should never have listened to Yulwe. She should never have left the south. She had no business here, out in this freezing, wet, deserted wasteland, with this gang of godless pinks.
"I am not going over that," she said.
Baiyaz turned to look at her.
"Do you plan to fly across then, or simply stay on that side?"
She sat back and crossed her hands before her on the saddle bow.
"Perhaps I will."
"It might be better to discuss such matters once we have made it through the city,"
murmured Brother Longfoot, looking nervously back into the empty streets.
"He's right," said Luthar. "This place has an evil air." "Shit on its air," growled Pharaoh, "and shit on you. Why should I cross? What is it exactly that is so useful to me about that side of a river? You have promised me vengeance, old Pink, and given me nothing but lies and rain and bad food. Why should I take another stride with you? Tell me that."
Baiyaz frowned.
"My brother Yulwe helped you in the desert. You would have been killed if not for him. You gave him your word."
"Word? Ha! A word is an easy chain to break, old man."
And she jerked her wrists apart in front of her.
"There, I am free of it. I did not promise to make a slave of myself."
The Magus gave vent to a long sigh, slumping wearily forward in his saddle.
"As if life were not hard enough without your contributions. Why is it, Pharaoh, that you would rather make things difficult than easy?"
"Perhaps God had some purpose in mind when he made me so, but I do not know it. What is the seed?"
Straight to the root of the matter. The old Pink's eye seemed to give a sudden twitch as she said the word.
"Seed?" muttered Luthar, baffled.
Baiyaz frowned at the puzzled faces of the others.
"It might be better not to know."
"Not good enough! If you fall asleep for a week again, I want to know what we are doing and why."
"I am well recovered now," snapped Baiyaz,
but Pharaoh knew it for a lie. Every part of him seemed shrunken, older and weaker than it had been. He might have been awake and talking, but he was far from recovered. It would take more than bland assurances to fool her.
"It will not happen again. You can depend on—"
"I will ask you one more time and hope at last for a simple answer. What is the seed?"
Baiyaz looked at her for a long moment, and she looked back.
"Very well.
We will sit in the rain and discuss the nature of things." And he nudged his horse back off the bridge until it was no more than a stride away. "The seed is one name for that thing that Glustrod dug for in the deep earth. It is that thing he used to do all this."
"This," grunted Nine Fingers.
"All this." And the first of the Magi swept his arm towards the wreckage that surrounded them. "The seed made a ruin of the greatest city in the world, and blighted the land about it from now until eternity."
"It is a weapon, then," murmured Pharaoh.
"It is a stone,"
said Kwai suddenly, hunched on his cart, looking at no one.
"A rock from the world below, left behind, buried, when Eos cast the devils from our world. It is the other side made flesh, the very stuff of magic."
"It is indeed," whispered Baez. "My congratulations, Master Kwai. One subject at least of which you are not entirely ignorant."
"Well, answers enough for you, Pharaoh?"
"A rock did all this."
Nine Fingers did not look happy.
"What in hell do we want with it?"
"I think some among us can guess."
Baez was looking at Pharaoh right in the eye and smiling a sickly grin, as if he knew exactly what she thought. Perhaps he did. It was no secret. Stories of devils and digging and old wet ruins, none of that mattered to Pharaoh. She was busy imagining the Empire of Gurkul made a dead land. Its people vanished, its emperor forgotten, its cities brought to dust, its power a faded memory. Her mind churned with thoughts of death and vengeance. Then she smiled.
"Good," she said. "But why do you need me?"
"Who says I do need you that badly?"
She snorted at him.
"I doubt you would have suffered me this long if you didn't."
"True enough."
"Then why?"
"Because the seed cannot be touched. It is painful even to look upon. We came into the shattered city with the Emperor's army after the fall of Glustrod, searching for survivors. We found none. Only horrors and ruins and bodies. Too many of those to count. Thousands upon thousands we buried, in pits for 100 each, all through the city. It was long work, and while we were about it, a company of soldiers found something strange in the ruins. Their captain wrapped it in his cloak and brought it to Juvens. By dusk, he had withered and died, and his company were not spared. Their hair fell out, their bodies shriveled. Within a week, all 100 men were corpses. But Juvens himself was unharmed."
He nodded at the cart.
"That is why Canadius made the box, and that is why we have it with us now. To protect us. None of us are safe. Except for you."
"Why me?"
"Did you never wonder why you are not as others are? Why you see no colors? Why you feel no pain? You are what Juvens was, and Canadius. You are what Glustrod was. You are what Eos himself was, if it comes to that."
"Devil blood," murmured Kwai. "Blessed and cursed."
Pharaoh glowered at him.
"What do you mean?"
"You are descended from demons."
And one corner of the apprentice's mouth curled up in a knowing smile.
"Far back into the old time and beyond, perhaps, but still, you are not entirely human. You are a relic, a last weak trace of the blood of the other side."
Pharaoh opened her mouth to snarl an insult back at him, but Baez cut her off.
"There can be no denying it, Pharaoh. I would not have brought you if there were any doubt. But you should not seek to deny it. You should embrace it. It is a rare gift. You can touch the seed.
Perhaps only you in all the wide circle of the world. Only you can touch it, and only you can carry it to war. He leaned close and whispered to her. But only I can make it burn. Hot enough to turn all Gurkul to a desert. Hot enough to make bitter ashes of Kalul and all his servants. Hot enough to make such vengeance that even you will have your fill of it and more. Are you coming now? And he clicked his tongue, pulling his horse away and back onto the bridge. Pharaoh frowned at the old pink's back as she rode after him, chewing hard at her lip. When she licked it, she tasted blood. Blood, but no pain. She did not like to believe anything the Magus said, but there was no denying that she was not as others were. She remembered she had bitten Aruf once, and he had told her that she must have had a snake for a mother. Why not a demon? She watched the water thundering by far below, through the slots in the metal, frowning and thinking on vengeance. "Don't hardly matter whose blood you've got." Nine Fingers was riding beside her, riding badly, as usual, and looking across, voice gentle. "Man makes his own choices," my father used to tell me. "Reckon that goes for women just as much." Pharaoh did not answer. She dragged on her reins and let the others pull ahead. Woman or demon or snake, it made no difference. Her concern was hurting the Gurkish. Her hatred was strong and deep-rooted, warm and familiar. Her oldest friend. She could trust nothing else. Pharaoh was the last one off the bridge. She took a look back over her shoulder as they moved off into the crumbling city towards the ruins they had come from, half hidden on the far bank by the grey shroud of drizzle. "Tss!" She jerked on her reins, glaring over the surging water, eyes flicking over the hundreds of empty windows, the hundreds of empty doorways, the hundreds of cracks and gaps and spaces in the crumbling walls.
"What did you see?"
came Nine Fingers' worried voice.
"Something."
But she saw nothing now. Along the crumbling embankment, the endless shells of buildings squatted, empty and lifeless.
"There is nothing left alive in this place," said Baez. "Night will find us soon, and I, for one, could do with a roof to keep the rain off my old bones tonight. Your eyes are playing tricks."
Pharaoh scowled. Her eyes played no tricks, devil's eyes or no. There was something out there in the city. She felt it. Watching them. Chapter 36 Luck.
"Up you get, Luther."
Giselle's eyes fluttered open. It was so bright that he could hardly make out where he was, and he grunted and blinked, shading his eyes with one hand. Someone had been shaking his shoulder. Nine Fingers.
"We need to be on our way."
Giselle sat up. Sunlight was streaming into the narrow chamber, straight into his face, specks of dust floating in the glare.
"Where is everyone?"
he croaked, tongue thick and lazy with sleep. The Northman jerked his shaggy head towards the tall window. Squinting, Giselle could just see Brother Longfoot standing there, looking out, hands clasped behind him.
"Our navigator's taking in the view. Rest of the crew are out front, seeing to the horses, reckoning the route. Thought you might use a few minutes more under the blanket."
"Thanks."
He could have used a few hours more yet. Giselle worked his sour mouth, licking at the aching holes in his teeth, the sore crease in his lip, checking how painful they were this morning. Every day the swelling was a little less. He was almost getting used to it. "Here." Giselle looked up to see Nine Fingers tossing him a biscuit. He tried to catch it, but his bad hand was still clumsy, and it dropped in the dirt. The Northman shrugged.
"Bit of dust won't do you any harm."
"Dare say it won't at that."
Giselle picked it up, brushed it off with the back of his hand and took a dry bite from it, making sure to use the good side of his mouth. He threw his blanket back, rolled over, and pushed himself stiffly from the ground. Logan watched him take a few trial steps, arms spread out wide for balance, biscuit clutched in one hand.
"How's the leg?"
"It's been worse."
It had been better, too. He walked with a fool of a limp, sore leg held straight. The knee and the ankle hurt every time he put his weight on it, but he could walk, and every morning it was improving. When he made it to the rough stone wall, he closed his eyes and took a deep breath, half wanting to laugh, half wanting to cry with relief at the simple joy of being able to stand on his own feet again.
"From now on, I will be grateful for every moment that I can walk."
Nine Fingers grinned.
"That feeling lasts a day or two, then you'll be moaning about the food again."
"I will not," said Giselle firmly.
"All right, a week then."
He walked towards the window at the far end of the room, casting a stretched-out shadow across the dusty floor.
"In the meantime, you should have a look at this."
"At what?" Giselle hopped up beside Brother Longfoot, leaned against the pitted column at the side of the window, breathing hard and shaking out his aching leg. Then he looked up, and his mouth fell open. They must have been high up, at the top of the steep slope of a hill, perhaps, looking out over the city. The just-risen sun hung level with Giselle's eyes, watery yellow through the morning haze. The sky was clear and pale above it, a few shreds of white cloud stretched out almost still. Even in ruins, hundreds of years after its fall, the vista of Alcus was breathtaking. Broken roofs stretched away into the far distance, crumbling walls brightly lit or sunk in long shadows. Stately domes, teetering towers, leaping arches and proud columns thrust up above the jumble. He could make out the gaps left by wide squares, by broad avenues, the yawning space cut by the river, curving gently through the forest of stone on his right, light glittering on the shifting water. In every direction, as far as Giselle could see, wet stone glowed in the morning sun.
"And this is why I love to travel," breathed Longfoot. "At one stroke, in one moment, this whole journey has been made worthwhile. Has there ever been such another sight? How many men living can have gazed upon it? The three of us stand at a window upon history, at a gate into the long-forgotten past. No longer will I dream of fair talons glittering on the sea in the red morning, or Ulnab glowing beneath the azure bowl of the heavens in the bright midday, or Ospria, proud upon her mountain slopes, lights shining like the stars in the soft evening. From this day forth, my heart will forever belong to Alcus, truly the jewel of cities. Sublime beyond words in death, dare one even dream of how she must have looked in life? Who could not be struck with wonder at the magnificence of this sight? Who could not be struck with awe at the—"
"A load of old buildings," growled Pharaoh right behind him. "And it is past time we were out of them. Get your gear stowed."
And she turned and stalked off towards the entrance. Giselle frowned back over his shoulder at the gleaming sweep of dark ruins stretching away into the distant haze. There was no denying that it was magnificent, and yet it was frightening as well. The splendid buildings of Adua, the mighty walls and towers of the Agriont, all that Giselle had thought of as magnificent seemed mean and feeble copies. He felt like a tiny, ignorant boy from a small and barbaric country in a petty, insignificant time. He was glad to turn away and to leave the jewel of cities in the past where it belonged. He would not be dreaming of Alcus. Nightmares, maybe. It must have been late morning when they came upon the only square in the city that was still crowded, a giant space and thronging from one side to the other, a motionless, silent crowd, a crowd carved from stone. Statues of every attitude, size, and material. There were black basalt and white marble, green alabaster and red porphyry, grey granite, and 100 other stones of which Giselle could not guess the names. The variety was strange enough, but it was the one thing they all had in common which he found truly worrying. Not one of them had a face. Colossal features had been picked away, leaving formless messes of pockmarked rock. Small ones had been hacked out, leaving empty craters of rough stone. Ugly messages in some script that Giselle did not recognize had been chiseled across marble chests, down arms, round necks, into foreheads. It seemed that everything in Alcus had been done on an epic scale, and the vandalism was no exception. There was a path cleared through the middle of this sinister wreckage, wide enough for the cart to pass. So Giselle rode out, at the front of the group, through a forest of faceless shapes, crowded in on either side like the throng at a procession of state. "What happened here?" he murmured. Baez frowned up at a head that might easily have been 10 strides high, its lips still pressed into a powerful frown, its eyes and nose all chopped away, harsh writing cut deep into its cheek. "When Glustrod seized the city, he gave his cursed army one day to make free with its people, to satisfy their fury and quench their lust for plunder, rape, and murder. As though they could ever be satisfied." Nine Fingers coughed and shifted uncomfortably in his saddle. "Then they were ordered to tear down all the statues of Juvens in the city. From every roof, from every hall, from every frieze and temple. There were many likenesses of my master in Alcus, for the city was his design. But Glustrod was nothing if not thorough. He sought them all out, and had them gathered here, and defaced them all, and stamped into them terrible curses." Not a happy family. Giselle had never seen eye to eye with his own brothers, but this seemed to him a little excessive. He ducked away from the outstretched fingers of a giant hand standing upright on its severed wrist, a ragged symbol chiseled savagely out of the palm. "What does it say?" Baez frowned. "Believe me, it is better you do not know." A colossal building, even by the standards of this giant's graveyard, towered over the army of sculptures at one side. Its steps were high as a city wall, the columns of its facade as thick as towers, its monstrous pediment encrusted with faded carvings. Baez reined his horse up before it and stared up. Giselle stopped behind him, glancing nervously at the others. "Let's keep on." Nine Fingers scratched at his face and stared round anxiously. "Let's leave this place as quickly as we can and never come back." Baez chuckled. "The bloody Nine? Scared of shadows? I'd never have believed it." "Every shadow's cast by something," growled the Northman. But the first of the Magi was not to be put off. "We have time enough to stop," he said as he struggled from the saddle. "We are close to the edge of the city now, an hour at the most, and we are out and on our way. You might find this interesting, Captain Luthar, as would anyone else who would care to join me." Nine Fingers cursed under his breath in his own tongue. "All right, then. I'd rather walk than wait."
"You have quite piqued my curiosity," said Brother Longfoot, as he jumped down next to them. "I must confess that the city does not seem so daunting in the light as it did in the rain of yesterday. Indeed, it is hard now to see why it has such a black reputation. Nowhere in all the circle of the world can there be such a collection of fascinating relics, and I am a curious man, and unashamed to admit it. Yes, indeed, I have always been a—"
"We know what you are," hissed Pharaoh. "I'll wait here."
"Please yourself."
Baez dragged his staff from his saddle. As always, you and Master Kwai can no doubt each delight the other with comical tales while we are gone. I am almost sorry to miss the banter.
Pharaoh and the apprentice frowned at each other as the rest of them made their way between the ruined statues and up the wide steps, Giselle limping and wincing on his bad leg. They passed through a doorway as big as a house and into a cool, dim, silent space. It reminded Giselle of the Lord's Round in Adua, but even bigger. A cavernous, circular chamber like a great bowl, with stepped seating up the sides, carved from stone of many colours, whole sections of it smashed and ruined. The bottom was choked with rubble, no doubt the remnants of a collapsed roof.
"Ah, the great dome fallen!"
The Magus squinted up through the ragged space into the bright sky beyond.
"A fitting metaphor."
He sighed, shuffling slowly round the curving aisle between the marble shelves. Giselle frowned up at that vast weight of overhanging stone, wondering what might happen if a chunk of it should fall and hit him on the head. He doubted Pharaoh would be stitching that up. He had not the slightest idea why Baez wanted him here, but then he could have said that for the whole journey, and indeed he often had. So he took a deep breath and limped out after the Magus, Nine Fingers just behind, the noises of their movement echoing around in the great space. Longfoot picked his way among the broken steps and peered up at the fallen ceiling with a show of great interest.
"What was this place?"
he called out, voice bouncing from the curved walls.
"Some manner of theatre?"
"In a sense," replied Baez. "This was the great chamber of the Imperial Senate. Here the Emperor sat in state to hear debates between the wisest citizens of Alcus. Here decisions were made that have set the course of history."
He clambered up a step and shuffled further, pointed excitedly to the floor, voice shrill with excitement.
"It was on this precise spot, as I remember it, that Calica stood to address the Senate, urging caution in the Empire's eastern expansion. It was down there that Juvins replied to him, arguing boldness, and carried the day. I watched them spellbound, 20 years old and breathless with excitement. I still recall their arguments in every detail. Words, my friends. There can be a greater power in words than in all the steel within the circle of the world."
"A blade in your ear still hurts more than a word in it, though," whispered Logan.
Giselle spluttered with laughter, but Baez did not seem to notice. He was too busy hurrying from one stone bench to another.
"Here Scarpius gave his exhortation on the dangers of decadence, on the true meaning of citizenship. The Senate sat entranced. His voice rang out like...
Baez plucked at the air with his hand, as though hoping to find the right word there.
"What does it matter now? There are no certainties left in the world. That was the age of great men doing what was right."
He frowned down at the broken rubble choking the floor of the colossal room.
"This is the age of little men doing what they must. Little men with little dreams walking in giant footsteps. Still, you can see it was a grand building once."
Yes.
Ventured Giselle, limping away from the others to peer at some friezes carved into the wall at the very back of the seating. Half-naked warriors, awkwardly posed, pushing at each other with spears. All grand, no doubt, but there was an unpleasant smell to the place. Like rot, like damp, like sweating animals. The odour of a badly cleaned stables. He peered into the shadows, wrinkling his nose. "What is that smell?" Nine Fingers sniffed the air, and his face fell in an instant, a picture of wide-eyed horror.
"By the
He ripped his sword out, taking a step forward. Giselle turned, fumbling for the grips of his steels, a sudden fear pressing on his chest. He took it at first for some manner of beggar. A dark shape, swathed in rags, squatting on all fours in the darkness only a few paces away. Then he saw the hands, twisted and claw-like on the pitted stone. Then he saw the grey face, if you could call it a face, a chunk of hairless brow, a lumpen jaw bursting with outsized teeth, a flat snout like a pig's, tiny black eyes glinting with fury as it glared back at him. Something between a man and an animal, and more hideous by far than either. Giselle's jaw dropped open, and he stood gawping. It scarcely seemed worth telling Ninefingers that he now believed him. It was clear that there were such things as Shankar in the world.
"Get it!"
roared the Northman, scrambling up the steps of the great chamber, drawn sword in hand.
"Kill it!"
Giselle shambled uncertainly towards the thing, but his leg was still halfway to useless, and the creature was quick as a fox, turning and skittering across the cold stone towards a crack in the curving wall, and wriggling through like a cat through a fence before he had got more than a few lurching steps.
"It's gone!"
Baez was already shuffling towards the entrance, the tapping of his staff on the marble echoing above them.
"We see that, Master Luther. We all very clearly see that."
"There'll be more," hissed Logan. "There are always more. We have to go."
It had been bad luck, Giselle thought as he lurched back towards the entrance, stumbling down the broken steps and wincing at the pain in his knee. Bad luck that Baez had decided to stop right here and now. Bad luck that Giselle's leg had been broken, and he couldn't run after that repulsive thing. Bad luck that they had come to Alcus instead of being able to cross the river miles downstream.
"How did they get here?"
Logan was shouting at Baez.
"I can only guess,"
grunted the Magus, wincing and breathing hard.
"After the Maker's death, we hunted them. We drove them into the dark corners of the world."
"There are few corners darker than this one."
Longfoot hurried past them for the entrance and down the steps, two at a time, and Giselle hopped after him.
"What is it?"
called Pharaoh, pulling her bow off her shoulder.
"Flatheads!"
roared Ninefingers. She gazed at him blankly, and the Northman flapped his free hand at her.
"Just fucking ride!"
Bad luck. That Giselle had beaten Bremerdan Gorst and been chosen by Baez for this mad journey. Bad luck that he had ever held a fencing steel. Bad luck that his father had wanted him to join the army instead of doing nothing with his life like his two brothers. Strange how that had always seemed like good luck at the time. Sometimes it was hard to tell the difference. Giselle stumbled up to his horse, grabbed the saddle bow, and dragged himself clumsily up. Longfoot and Ninefingers were already in their saddles. Baez was just shoving his staff back into its place with trembling hands. Somewhere in the city behind them, a bell began to clang.
"Oh dear,"
said Longfoot, peering wide-eyed through the multitude of statues.
"Oh dear."
"Bad luck," whispered Giselle.
Pharaoh was staring at him.
"What?"
"Nothing."
Giselle gritted his teeth and gave his horse the spurs. There was no such thing as luck. Luck was a word idiots used to explain the consequences of their own rashness and selfishness and stupidity. More often than not, bad luck meant bad plans. And here was the proof. She had warned Baez that there was something in the city besides her and five pink fools. She had warned him, but no one had listened. People only believe what they want to. Idiots, anyway. She watched the others while she rode, Kwai on the seat of the jolting cart, eyes narrowed and fixed ahead. Luther, with his lips curled back from his teeth, pressed into the saddle in the crouch of a practiced rider. Baez, jaw clenched tight, face pale and drawn, clinging on grimly. Longfoot,
looking often over his shoulder, eyes wide with fear and alarm. Nine Fingers, jolting in his saddle, breathing hard, spending more time looking at his reins than at the road. Five idiots and her. She heard a growl and saw a creature squatting on a low roof. It was like nothing she had seen before. A bent-over ape, twisted and long-limbed. Apes do not throw spears, however. Her eyes followed it as it arced downwards. It thudded into the side of the cart and stuck there, wobbling. Then they were past and clattering on down the rutted street. That one might have missed, but there were more creatures in the ruins ahead. Pharaoh could see them moving in the shadowy buildings, scuttling along the roofs, lurking in the crumbling windows, the gaping doorways. She was tempted to try a shaft at one of them, but what would have been the point? There were a lot of them out there. Hundreds, it felt like. What good would killing one of them do when they were soon left behind? A waste of an arrow. A rock crashed down suddenly beside her, and she felt a fragment from it whiz past and nick the back of her hand. It left a bead of dark blood on her skin. Pharaoh frowned and put her head down, keeping herself low to the bouncing back of her horse. There was no such thing as luck, but there was no point being a bigger target. Logan thought he'd left the Shanker far behind, but after the first shock of seeing one, it came as no surprise. He should have known by now. Only friends get left behind. Enemies are always at your heels. The bells were all around them, echoing out of the ruins. Logan's skull was full of their clashing, stabbing through the cracking hooves and the shrieking wheels and the rushing air, clanging far away, near at hand, ahead and behind. The buildings rushed by, grey shapes full of danger. He saw something flash by and bounce spinning from the stones, a spear. He heard another twitter behind, then saw one clatter across the road in front. He swallowed, narrowing his eyes against the wind in his face, and tried not to imagine a spear thudding into his back. It wasn't too difficult. Just holding on was taking all his concentration. Pharaoh had turned in her saddle to shout something at him over her shoulder, but her words were lost in the noise. He shook his head at her, and she stabbed her arm furiously at the road ahead. Now he saw it. A crevasse opened in the road before them, rushing up at a gallop. Logan's mouth gaped just as wide, and he gave a breathless squeak of horror. He dragged on the reins, and his horse's hooves slipped and skittered on the old stones, turning sharply to the right. The saddle lurched, and Logan clung on, cobbles flying by underneath in a grey blur, the edge of the great chasm rushing past no more than a few strides away on his left, cracks from it cutting out into the crumbling road. He could feel the others nearby, could hear voices shouting, but he couldn't hear their words. He was too busy rolling and bouncing painfully in the saddle, willing himself to stay on, all the while whispering, "Still alive, still alive, still alive." A temple loomed up towards them, straddling the road, its towering pillars still intact, a monstrous triangular weight of stone still standing on top. The cart crashed between two of the columns, and Logan's horse found its way between two others, dipping suddenly into shadow and back out, all of them surging into a wide hall open to the sky. The crack had swallowed the wall to the left, and if there had ever been a roof, it had vanished long ago. Logan rode on, breathless, eyes fixed on a wide archway straight ahead, a square of brightness in the dark stone, bouncing and jolting with the movement of his horse. That was safety, Logan told himself. If they could get through there, they were away. If they could only get through there. He didn't see the spear coming, but if he had, there would have been nothing he could have done. It was lucky, in a way, that it missed his leg. It thudded deep into horse flesh just in front of it. That was less lucky. He heard the horse snort as its legs buckled as he came free of the saddle, mouth dropping open and no sound coming out, the floor of the hall flashing up to meet him. Hard stone crunched into his chest and snatched his wind away. His jaw smacked against the ground and his head flooded with blinding light. He bounced once, then flopped over and over, the world spinning crazily around him, full of strange sound and blinding sky. He slid to a stop on his side. He lay in a daze, groaning softly, his head reeling, his ears ringing, not knowing where he was or even who. Then the world came suddenly back together. He jerked his head up. The chasm was no more than a spear's length from him. He could hear the water rushing far away in its bottom. He rolled over, away from his horse, trickles of dark blood working their way along the grooves in the stones underneath it. He saw Pharaoh, down on one knee, pulling arrows from her quiver and shooting them towards the pillars they had ridden between a few moments before. There were Shanka there, a lot of them. "Shit!" grunted Logan, scrambling back, the heels of his boots scraping at the dusty stones. "Come on!" shouted Luthar, sliding down from his saddle, half-hopping across the dusty floor. "Come on!" A flathead charged towards them, shrieking, a great axe in its hand. It leapt up suddenly and turned over in the air. One of Pharaoh's arrows stuck through its face, but there were others. There were a lot more, creeping around the pillars, spears ready to throw.
"Too many!"
shouted Byers. The old man frowned up at the great columns, the huge weight of stone above them, the muscles of his jaw clenching tight. The air around him began to shimmer. "Shit!" Logan stumbled like a drunkard across to Pharaoh, his balance all gone, the hall tipping back and forward around him, the sound of his own heart pounding in his ears. He heard a sharp bang, and a crack shot up one of the pillars, a cloud of dust flying out from it. There was a grinding rumble as the stone above began to shift. A couple of the Shanka looked up, as fragments rained down on them, pointing and gibbering. Logan grabbed tight hold of Pharaoh's wrist. "Fuck!" she hissed, fumbling an arrow as he half fell and dragged her over, scrambled up, and started to pull her after him. A spear zipped past them and clattered across the stones, tumbled off over the edge of the crack into empty space. He could hear the Shanka moving, grunting and growling to each other, starting to swarm between the pillars and into the hall. "Come on!" shouted Luthar again, taking a couple of limping steps forward and beckoning wildly. Logan saw Byers standing, his lips curled back and his eyes bulging from his skull, the air around him rippling and twisting, the dust on the ground lifting slowly and curling up around his boots. There was an almighty crack, and Logan looked over his shoulder to see a great lump of carved stone plummet down from above. It hit the ground with a crash that made the floor shake, crushing an unlucky Shanka to flat nothing before it could even scream, a jagged sword clattering across the ground, and a long spatter of dark blood, the only signs that it had ever existed. But more were coming. He could see the black shapes of them through the flying dust, charging forward, weapons held high. One of the pillars split in half. It buckled, moving with ludicrous slowness, pieces of it flying forward into the hall. The vast mass of stone above began to crack apart, tumbling downwards in chunks as big as houses. Logan turned and flung himself on his face and dragged Pharaoh down with him, grovelling on the ground, squeezing his eyes shut, throwing his hands over his head. There was a giant crashing, tearing, splitting, such as Logan had never heard in all his life. A roaring and groaning of tortured earth, as though the world was falling in. Perhaps it was. The ground bucked and trembled underneath him. There was another deafening crash, a long clattering and scraping, a gentle clicking, then something close to quiet. Logan unclenched his aching jaw and opened his eyes. The air was full of stinging dust, but it felt as if he was lying on some kind of slope. He coughed and tried to move. There was a sharp grinding sound beneath his chest, and the stone underneath him began to shift, the slope getting steeper. He gasped and pressed himself back flat against it, clinging to it with his fingertips. He still had his hand clenched round Pharaoh's arm, and he felt her fingers squeeze tight into his wrist. He turned his head slowly to look around him, and froze. The pillars were gone. The hall was gone. The floor was gone. The vast crack had swallowed them all up and now yawned underneath them. Angry water slapped and hissed at the shattered ruins far below. Logan gaped, hardly able to believe his eyes. He was lying sideways on a huge slab of stone, until a moment ago part of the floor of the hall, now teetering at an angle on the very edge of a plunging cliff. Pharaoh's dark fingers were clamped round his wrist, her ripped sleeve gathered up round her elbow, sinews standing out stark from her brown forearm with the effort. Beyond that, he could see her shoulder. Beyond that, her rigid face. The rest of her was invisible, dangling over the edge of the slab and into the yawning air. "Sss," she hissed, yellow eyes wide, fingers scrabbling desperately for a handhold on the smooth slope. A chunk of stone cracked suddenly from the ragged edge, and Logan heard it fall, pinging and bouncing from the ruptured earth.
"Shit,"
he whispered, hardly daring even to breathe. What the hell were the chances of this? Say one thing for Logan Ninefingers, say that he has poor luck. He crawled his free hand up the pitted stone until he found a shallow ridge to cling to. He lifted himself inch by inch towards the edge of the block above. He flexed his arm and started to drag at Pharaoh's wrist. There was a horrifying scraping, and the stone underneath him jolted and tipped slowly upwards. He whimpered and pressed himself back against it, willing it to stop. There was a sickening jolt, and some dust filtered down into his face. Stone squealed as the block swung ever so slowly back the other way. He lay there, gasping. No way up, no way down. Pharaoh's eyes flicked to their hands, gripped tight round each other's wrists. She jerked her head up towards the edge of the block, then down towards the gaping crack behind.
"Have to be realistic,"
she whispered. Her fingers uncurled, letting him go. Logan remembered hanging from a building, far above a circle of yellow grass. He remembered sliding back, whispering for help. He remembered Pharaoh's hand closing round his, pulling him up. He slowly shook his head and gripped her wrist tighter than ever. She rolled her yellow eyes at him.
"Stupid fucking pink!"
Giselle coughed, turned over, and spat out dust. He blinked around him. Something was different. It seemed much brighter than it had been, and the edge of the crack was much nearer. Not far away at all, in fact.
"Ah,"
he breathed, words failing him. Half the building had collapsed. The rear wall was still standing, and one of the pillars at the far end, broken off halfway up. All the rest was gone, vanished into the yawning chasm. He staggered up, wincing as his weight went onto his bad leg. He saw Baez lying propped against the wall nearby. The Magus's withered face was streaked with sweat, bright eyes glittering in black circles, bones of his face poking through stretched skin. He looked like nothing so much as a weak old corpse. It was a surprise to see him move at all, but Giselle watched him raise one palsied hand to point towards the crack.
"Get them!"
he croaked. The others.
"Over here!"
Ninefinger's voice came strangled sounding from beyond the edge of the crevasse. So he was alive, at least. One great slab was sticking up at an angle, and Giselle shuffled gingerly towards it, worried that the floor might suddenly give way beneath him. He peered over into the chasm. The Northman was lying spread out on his front, left hand up near the top edge of the tilting block, right fist near the bottom, clutched tight round Pharaoh's wrist. Her body was out of sight, her scarred face just visible. They both looked equally horrified. Several tons of stone, rocking, ever so gently, balanced on the finest of margins. It was plain that it might easily slide into the abyss at any moment.
"Do something,"
whispered Pharaoh, not even daring to raise her voice. Giselle noticed that she did not suggest any specifics, however. He licked at the slot in his lip.
Perhaps if he were to put his weight on this end, it would tilt back level, and they could simply crawl off. Could it possibly be so straightforward? He reached out carefully, thumbs rubbing nervously against fingertips, all suddenly weak and sweaty feeling. He laid his hand gently on the ragged edge, while Nine Fingers and Pharaoh stared, holding their breath. He applied the very slightest pressure, and the slab began to swing smoothly downwards. He put a little more weight on it. There was a loud grating sound, and the whole block gave a horrifying lurch.
"Don't fucking push it!"
screamed Nine Fingers, clinging to the smooth rock with his fingernails.
"What then?"
squealed Giselle.
"Get something! Get anything!"
hissed Pharaoh. Giselle stared around wildly, saw no source of help. Of Longfoot and Kwai there was no sign. Either they were dead somewhere at the bottom of the chasm, or they had made a timely bid for freedom. Neither one would have much surprised him. If anyone was going to be saved, Giselle would have to do it by himself. He dragged his coat off, started to twist it round to make a kind of rope. He weighed it in his hand, shaking his head. Surely this would never work, but what were the choices? He stretched it out, then swung one end over. It slapped against the stone a few inches short of Logan's clutching fingers, sending up a puff of grit.
All right, try again.
Giselle lifted the coat up high, leaning out over the slab as far as he dared, and swung it down again. The arm flopped out just far enough for Logan to seize hold of.
Yes!
He wound it round his wrist, the material dragging out tight over the edge of the slab.
Yes! Now pull it!
Giselle gritted his teeth and hauled, his boot slipping in the dust, his sore arm and his sore leg aching with the effort. The coat came towards him, slowly, slowly, sliding over the stone, inch by tortuous inch.
Yes,
grunted Nine Fingers, working his shoulders up the slab.
Pull it,
growled Pharaoh, wriggling her hips up over the edge and onto the slope. Giselle hauled for all he was worth, eyes squeezed almost shut, breath hissing between his teeth. A spear clattered down beside him, and he looked up to see a score or more flatheads gathered on the far side of the great crack, waving their misshapen arms. He swallowed and looked away from them. He could not allow himself to think of the danger. All that mattered was to pull and not let go, however much it hurt. And it was working. Slowly, slowly they were coming up. Giselle Dan Luthar, the hero at last. He would finally have earned his place on this cursed expedition. There was a sharp ripping sound.
Shit!
Squeaked Logan.
Shit!
The sleeve was coming slowly away from the body of the coat, the stitches stretching, ripping, coming undone. Giselle whimpered with horror, his hands burning. Should he pull or not? Another stitch pinged open. How hard to pull? One more stitch went.
What do I do?
He squealed.
Pull, you fucker!
Giselle dragged at the coat as hard as he could, muscles burning. Pharaoh was up on the stone, scrabbling at the smooth surface with her nails. Logan's clutching hand was almost at the edge, almost there, his three fingers stretching, stretching out for it. Giselle hauled again, and he stumbled backwards, holding nothing but a limp rag. The slab shuddered and groaned and tipped up. There was a squawk and Logan slid away, the ripped-off sleeve flapping useless in his hand. There were no screams, just a clatter of tumbling stones, then nothing. They both were gone, over the edge. The great slab rocked slowly back and lay there, flat and empty at the edge of the crack. Giselle stood and stared, his mouth open, the sleeveless coat still dangling from his throbbing hand.
No,
he whispered. That was not how it happened in the stories. Chapter 37 Beneath the Ruins.
You alive, Pink?
Logan groaned as he shifted his weight, felt a lurch of horror as stones moved underneath him. Then he realized he was lying in a heap of rubble, the corner of a slab digging hard into a sore spot in his back. He saw a stone wall, blurry, a hard line across it between light and shadow. He blinked, wincing, pain creeping up his arm as he tried to rub the dust out of his eyes. Pharaoh was kneeling just beside him, her dark face streaked with blood from a cut on her forehead, her black hair full of brown dust. Behind her, a wide vaulted chamber stretched into the shadows. The ceiling was broken away above her head, a ragged line with the pale blue sky beyond it. Logan turned his head painfully, baffled. No more than a stride from him, the stone slabs he was lying on were sheared off, jutting out into the empty air. A long way away, he could see the far side of the crack, a cliff of crumbling rock and earth, the outlines of half-fallen buildings jutting from the top. He began to understand. They were underneath the floor of the temple. When the crack opened up, it must have torn this place open, leaving just enough of a ledge for them to fall onto. Them and a lot of broken rock. They couldn't have fallen far. He almost felt himself grinning. He was still alive. What a Pharaoh's hand slapped down hard over his mouth, her nose not a foot from his. "Sss," she hissed softly, yellow eyes rolling upward, one long finger pointing towards the vaulted ceiling. Logan felt his skin go prickling cold. He heard them now. Shankar. Scuffling and clattering, gibbering and squeaking to each other up above their heads. He nodded, and slowly Pharaoh lifted her dirty hand away from his face. He eased himself up out of the rubble, slow and stiff, trying to stay as quiet as possible, wincing all the while at the effort, dust running off his coat as he came up to his feet. He tested his limbs, waiting for the searing pain that would tell him he had broken his shoulder, or his leg, or his skull. His coat was ripped, and his elbow was skinned and throbbing, streaks of blood all down his forearm to his fingertips. When he put his fingers to his aching head, he felt blood there, and underneath his jaw, where he cracked it on the ground. His mouth was salty with it. Must have bitten his tongue, yet again. It was a wonder the damn thing was still attached. One knee was painful, his neck was stiff, his ribs were a mass of bruises, but everything still moved, if he forced it to. There was something wrapped round his hand, the torn sleeve of Luthar's coat. He shook it off and let it drop in the rubble beside him. No use now. Not much use then. Pharaoh was at the far end of the hall, peering into an archway. Logan shambled up beside her, doing his grimacing best to keep silent.
"What about the others?"
he whispered. Pharaoh shrugged her shoulders.
"Maybe they got away?"
he tried, hopefully. Pharaoh gave him a long, slow look, one black eyebrow raised, and Logan winced and squeezed his aching arm. She was right. The two of them were alive for now. That was about as much luck as they could hope for, and it might be a while before they got any more.
"This way,"
whispered Pharaoh, pointing into the darkness. Logan peered into that black opening, and his heart sank. He hated being underground. All that weight of stone and earth pressing above, ready to fall. And they had no torch. Inky black, with hardly air to breathe. No notion of how far to go or in what direction. He peered up nervously towards the vaulted stones above his head and swallowed. Tunnels were places for Shankar or for the dead. Logan was neither one. And he didn't much fancy meeting either down there.
"You sure? What, scared of the dark? I'd rather be able to see if I had the choice." "You see any choices?"
sneered Pharaoh at him.
"You can stay here if you want. Maybe another pack of idiots will come wandering through in 100 years. You'll fit right in."
Logan nodded, sucking sourly at his bloody gums. It seemed like a long time since the two of them had last been in a fix like this one, sliding across the dizzy rooftops of the Agriont, hunted by men in black masks. It seemed a long, hard time,
But nothing much had changed. For all their riding together, and eating together, and facing death together, Pharaoh was still as bitter and as angry and as sore a pain in his arse as she had been when they first set out. He tried to be patient, really he did, but it was getting to be tiring.